Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this is live call-in radio. This is the Investor Resources live radio program. And we are here to discuss recent events in the market. There's been a little bit to talk about.
Stuff
and we are going to touch on it. However, if you want us to touch on something going on in your portfolio about which you have some concerns, give us a call, and we will see what we can do to allay some of your anxiety. Maybe you've just had a recommendation from your friendly neighborhood financial advisor, and you're not quite sure whether the purpose was to help you out or to help them out. And we probably have an opinion. The magic phone number is 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Paul is sitting there at the control desk, control panel at large, and he will take your call, put it on the screen, and interrupt us. Let us know that you are waiting for an answer. So that number again, 800-465-8770. We are getting really close to the monthly stock market update seminar, which this one coming up should be really interesting. We haven't written it yet, so we don't know what's in it. If you tune in, you'll find out, just like we will. All you have to do to join is register at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner says webinar, and it is Saturday the 4th at 9 a.m., and there'll be plenty of time for your questions and our answers for whatever they may be. But register at irradio.com. If you do not get Week in Review from us, send us an email, help@irradio.com. Week in Review, or Review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so that we can set you up in constant contact, which makes it really easy for you to unsubscribe if you decide that what we send you, you don't want to be bothered with. But that would make you an exceptional person because very, very, very few ever unsubscribe. Well, this week had some real excitement in the market. And what we know is that while it seemed to have been mitigating, COVID fear reigned supreme on Friday.
Well, did it? It hit at the open and stayed there all session long. Never.
There was no place to hide. Yeah. It actually started over the weekend in Europe because the news of the new variant in South Africa broke over the weekend. So Europe, which opens up before we do, was already collapsing, and the shift was on. The panic out of stocks, the panic buying of government bonds was well underway before the New York Stock Exchange bell was rung at 9:30 on Friday morning. And from there, it was just red. I happened to have what looks like the back end of a container ship here of where the stock activity was. And there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. There were 17 green spots on this sheet of paper. Everything else was red. Apple was down more than 2.5. Google down almost that much. J.P. Morgan down 4%. It didn't matter where you looked. People were running scared. Just let me out of here. You know, this was the mass exit, and there was hardly enough room to get everybody out the door safely.
It was interesting. I thought that people were buying bonds. Like you said, the treasuries were up on the day. So it just that's one of those things, you know, in 08 when everything really collapsed, bonds went down with stocks. And on Friday, bonds went up as stocks went down. So people may have been just trying to rotate and not just completely leave the market. They were just trying to find a place to park until we know anything about this variant, which, of course, we don't yet. But that's no reason not to panic, right? So never try to get in the way of the lemmings once they start running.
Boy, that's certainly true. And that's a good observation, Perry. I mean, theoretically, when you get into the academics and the math, the reason people have bonds in their portfolio is for diversification and to mitigate, the theory is it mitigates risk. And that's the reason they're supposed to often put gold in or international. And in 08, none of that worked. And this time, bonds did work, but the other defensive positions went right along with stocks, right, including gold.
Yep.
And the theory here would be that gold's a haven of safety. And there's been an argument that Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, are the new alternative as a haven of safety. Gold is no longer necessary because we have this digital world that we live in. Well, that didn't work either.
Nope. They all got hit.
So the few exceptions were extremely few, and most of them showed up in the government bond arena. Early in the morning, it looked like tech was going to hold up, but then that collapsed. Interestingly enough, though, on Friday was a short day in the market. It was half day, closed early, which is not uncommon whenever there's a Thursday holiday. The Friday following is an early close, closes at 1 Eastern. But what was interesting is that for a half day of trading on the SPY, which is the ETF for the S&P 500, the volume was double the whole day of Wednesday, the last normal day of trading. I mean, it was a half day, but it was twice as much volume. So, you know, that's representative of panic, not process.
Correct. And that's really odd. Usually the Friday after Thanksgiving is usually just a sleeper of a session. Not much goes on. And but once it opened down as big as it did and stayed there, man, it was big volume. It was big selling. Pretty amazing day.
So the fourth next weekend is our monthly stock market update webinar. Register for that at irradio.com. irradio.com. Need your first and last name. Well, you'll get that. I mean, I was thinking of the weekend review which will be coming out on Monday. But in any event, it's going to be an interesting week. At this point, I looked at the futures because after the New York it closes, there's still some Asian markets that are working
still cranking out. Sure.
Yeah. And so the futures for the U.S. market, given the trading that was going on overseas in Asia, is not nearly as bad as it was Friday morning. I mean, it's about a third to a quarter of what was going on with Europe before we opened on Friday. I expect that Monday's probably going to be at least start off on the downside. What we don't know is will the knee-jerk reaction to what was 100 cases over the weekend, and it's probably expanded since, and they're serious, but 100 cases to cause European markets to have a significant drop. They did not collapse, but they certainly had a significant drop to be followed up by us. Now, to have the market down 900 points in today's world is not what it would have meant if it was 10 years ago.
Not quite the same, right.
Or heavens to Murgatroyd, think of Black Monday in October of 87. It was a 300-point drop. And we're at 900 from 35,000 range is, you know, it's uncomfortable, but it's
a bad
not.
Day. It's a bad day, but it's not a market crash, and it's not a reason to head for the exits. It's just a bad day, especially when it's not market driven. You know, this is headline driven by another COVID headline, and it doesn't matter what market metrics you're watching. They don't add up to the sell off that happened. That's all based on what might happen from the COVID front.
So you, and that's a really important point. It's headline driven. It's not data driven. So people are responding to, well, what if governments lock us down again?
Right.
Shut us up in our homes, and businesses that are just trying to get on their feet collapse again. That's all the kind of what if fear mongering that was driving the rush for the exits. And I started with a moment ago just that tech looked like it was going to have a better day, but it did get the selling caught up with it. But at the end of the day, the volume on the NASDAQ was, it wasn't half, but it was lower than on Wednesday. Now, that's what you'd expect on a half day, less volume. And there was buying the dip coming in at the tail end of the day. We saw the same thing on the S&P, the Dow not so much, and the small cap stocks, they're a little bit of dip buying, but they're, I mean, they gave up all of the gains from the prior week, and they're right back in the middle of no man's land. So where do we go from here? Well, we'll find out when we move into next week, but actually a lot of things that were leaders are still quite strong. They, while they took some heat on Friday, they did not they didn't lose their footing.
Right.
So it's kind of a function of, do you own leaders that are strong, or do you own highly speculated stocks, which would reasonably be the biggest losers in the day? That, and that turned out to be the case. Or do you have a reasoned process that allows you to actually make a data-driven decision and say, I'm not in trouble here. Yeah, I'd rather not back up a percent or two, but I'm not in trouble.
It makes all the difference in the world when you have a process like that that has been tested, that you know is strong and can handle things like this. When things like this occur, there's no reason to get panicky about what's going on. Boy, don't I have to do something right away? And the answer is no. Not unless things are much, much worse than what happened on Friday. And that is, like you said, Don, that's a function of having a process that's already in place. You know how to react when things like that are going on, and you don't have to try to make it up as you go along. That's when you make a mistake. If you're reacting out of fear, you're almost always going to be headed the wrong direction, and usually at the worst time possible. So we avoid that all the time. We don't ever have any portfolio money in the market where there aren't rules behind that on what it is we're going to do. One of our rules is we got to get out here for a break. We are against our first break of the day. I'd like to remind everyone that next Saturday, December 4th, we're having our next market update. To register for that, just go to IRIradio.com. That is IRIradio.com. Go to the webinar page and give that registration link a click. You're going to get an email back with a link in it, and the next Saturday morning at 9, you click that link, and you will be live on the air with us. You'll be able to see the charts we're talking about, look at what we're looking at, and hopefully just gain some clarity as to what's going on out there and things we're doing, things we're paying attention to in the market. Again, you can register for that at IRIradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, we are here to answer questions about the market in general, the economy, Friday, whatever you want to talk about, we'd love to talk to you. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. We will be right back. Stay with us.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine.
A little rain must fall. That's true, and it certainly did on Friday in the markets, and it's probably going to be at least showering throughout the week in the week ahead when the market starts up.
Probably again. Not all clear yet, yeah.
That's true. The one of the things that has been the nemesis in the market has been the rising energy cost, and, of course, the administration and the associated bureaucrats with the administration always have a solution. But it was a struggle until they finally decided that, hey, supply and demand, right? And we need more supply. And OPEC's not giving it to us, and Russia won't. Well, actually, they are giving it to us. They're just not giving us oil. They're sticking it to us, though.
There we go.
So the administration decided to open up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. and add an extra 3 days of energy consumption, well, supply available for consumption, which is spread out over six months or longer. It's kind of a screwy process, but we had cheap oil in there. We're going to spend it. We got to put it back at higher prices. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But the COVID problem over the weekend actually took care of the pricing situation, though it'll take a while to show up in the market. Oil was down significantly. The U.S. Oil Fund, USO, was down 11% on the day. And if that trend continues, it will eventually find its way into the retail end. But it, more than likely, what you're going to see is a 10 or 15 cent drop of the price of gasoline. That's not going to be significant relief.
Exactly.
The real problem that we're facing is, what's the Fed going to do now? We're looking at high inflation. They don't want high inflation. We've had a strong dollar, which reversed on Friday. We need full employment, which we don't have. And the Fed's, Mr. Powell's comment this last Wednesday was, inflation's permanent. It's not transitory.
Oops.
What are we going to do now? So that, we've said this before, the Fed's in a box. It's painted itself into a corner. I'm going to use either illustration. What are we going to do? If we raise interest rates to kill the inflation scenario, we create a recession, which kills employment, which we're trying to raise. We don't know what to do. The tools that the Fed has are very limited, and they don't want the market to work this stuff out. It is going to take some more time. And there's some economic news which is not going to help them out. The industrial index that tracks manufacturing and services in the economy showed that in the services portion of the economy, which is two-thirds of our economy,
right,
stagflation is official.
Already there.
Now, there's a whole bunch of people who listen to this radio show who aren't old enough to remember stagflation in their life.
And that was ugly. It's ugly stuff. It's a slow grind to nowhere. It's not a pretty picture, and it's not anything, like you said, Don, it's not anything that most people have seen right now, people in the market, and it's going to be interesting to see what kind of reaction there is. And like you said, the main thing is, what's the Fed going to do? They really are going to have to choose a direction, make a decision, and then stick to it no matter what. It's going to be very interesting to see how that unfolds.
So the biggest fear here is that government makes another Titanic mistake. Now, everybody knows what the Titanic was and what happened with the Titanic. What most people don't know is a little bit of ensuing history, that as a result of the Titanic sinking, bureaucrats made changes in boats, passenger boats specifically, and mandated that there would be more lifeboats on board. So the Titanic sank in 1912, and with those increasing safety regulations, which is what we're looking at with COVID, mandatory extra cargo from extra weight because of the additional lifeboats made the SS Eastland top heavy. So 3 years later, with the extra safety equipment on board, it was top heavy and it sank in the Chicago River in 1915, killing 844 passengers, which was more than the passengers on the Titanic that were lost. Now, the Titanic had more crew that was lost because it was a bigger ship. But ironically, it was this intentional overreaction to solve a problem that really created an even bigger problem. And that's often what happens with investors, in overreacting to something that's gone on like Friday.
Absolutely. People do jump off the deep end. They make a decision based on fear, based on sometimes just based on what everyone else is doing. Well, that must mean I should do this too. And everybody follows each other right down the dead end. And sure enough, you crash into the wall and you wish you hadn't gone down there in the first place. And that's why you need a process that will let you see what's going on around you instead of blindly making decision based on what other people are doing or the fear of what's going on in the marketplace.
So one of the ways that portfolios, in quotes here, manage risk is one, by not putting money in stocks. That's what the bond portion is.
Right.
Which means I'm going to be satisfied with a lower rate of return because bonds don't give you as much return as stocks do over time. And the second one is the theoretically free lunch of finance, which is diversification.
Correct.
Well, diversification didn't help you in the 08-09 market, and it didn't help yesterday. It didn't help this week. So basically, broad diversification says, yeah, market collapses, I'm okay with the collapse because I'm going to follow right along with it. I'm just not going to have all my money in stocks. So, you know, overall, what's the difference? So diversification fools people. With Warren Buffett, diversification is for people who don't understand what they're doing. And that qualifies most financial advisors, I think.
That's one of the reasons that they use it. It's very easy to implement. It's very easy to sell the idea to someone that we're actually providing you with portfolio protection. And all in all, they aren't. It's costing you return. It's costing you money. And they're trying to make it sound like you're in the best place all the time, no matter what's going on in the market. And if you just step back and think about that for a second, you'll know that that can't be true. There is no all-weather portfolio that this is the best place to be, no matter what's going on in the market. That doesn't exist, but that's what they sell.
So thanks to diversification, your portfolio's performance in a crash can fare somewhat better than the broad market, which is broadly diversified by definition. But hopefully what happens is your volatility will be a little lower. But when that's the case, that means your returns are going to be lower too.
Has to be, right. Mm-hmm.
Which means people are looking for a way to beat the market by not investing in the market, i.e. bonds or something else, and diversification, which lowers their overall return. And Perry, in the notes before we got started here, I asked you a rhetorical question. Now listen carefully. Is diversification a real word?
If it's not, it should be. Well,
I didn't make that word up, but Mark Spitznagel, who wrote the book Safe Haven, and I'm now about two-thirds of the way through the book. I don't know if he created it or not, but that's the first time I've run into it, which basically is diversification doesn't solve your problem. He refers to it as diversification because it doesn't solve your risk problem and it reduces your returns. You have to have a safe haven process, and the standard portfolio process that people use gets an F.
It does.
It doesn't do that.
But the bit, you're so consistently brainwashed that this is the only thing to do. This is the only safe, prudent method of investing money, and it's the only way you should have your portfolio deployed. And it's just not true, but it does make it much easier for whoever handed you that pie chart. They now have to do next to nothing once they get your portfolio in-house, and their primary job is to stay on the phone and keep you from not moving your money because they're not going to do much to improve your position.
No, so the answer for some people, but they're ones who have the time to do that, is to try and pick their own stocks and not be diversified. I mean, be concentrated in a portfolio. And concentration is how you actually add return to your portfolio. If you're not going to be concentrated in your positions, you might as well just own the index because you are walking away from what actually can generate risk protection, safe haven, adding a safe haven process in there. And if you want returns, you can't be broadly diversified because too many things are drags on return. So what do you do? Well, you try to figure out where leaders are, and you own leaders, and you own them as long as they're leaders. And that's kind of what happened Friday, is there was really no change in leaders, even though everything backed up a couple of percentage points on a day, or actually over Wednesday, Thursday. Well, nothing on Thursday, so it'd be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're all down days in the market, Friday, the noticeable one. But leadership really hasn't rotated at this point in time. So where do you want to be in order to generate returns? You want to be with strength. If you are owning things that are sucking wind, they aren't doing you any good. But you are diversified. You're diversified with losers.
Right. Now, day like Friday, those weak positions are the ones that get hit the hardest. They get hit first and they lose the most. So if you're in the weak part of the market, a big down day like Friday hurts way more in your portfolio return than if you're in the strength of the market where there at least was money coming in and everybody wasn't already heading for the exit. So it's a double advantage. You have more time to make a move on the way down, and you're going to be in the right place on the way up. You just have to pay attention to where the market is, where the money's flowing, where the strength is, and where the weakness is, so you can not be there instead of just owning a little bit of everything and forgetting about it. We are at the bottom of the hour here, Dom. We got to go ahead and take a break here. If you haven't signed up for our Week in Review, that's our weekly email newsletter. It gives a little rundown on what you've probably heard this week out there in the financial news. It's a little heads up on what we think some of that that's important and some of those things that you can probably safely just ignore. If you'd like to begin receiving that, send us an email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line and put your first and last name in the body of the email, and you'll begin receiving that this Monday. Like Don said earlier, many people sign up. Not many people ever unsubscribe. It's a good piece, and it can really bring some clarity to your news media filtering. Let you know what some things you just don't need to worry about. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Detour, there's a muddy road ahead, detour, paid no mind to what it said, detour.
Well, if you have a process and you're following a process instead of the headlines, then you're sleeping okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, Friday was, nuts. Not that.
Right.
But, I mean, you went to bed and saying, okay, I mean, I know what I'm going to do when things hit my target decision levels, whatever they may be. I mean, all of our portfolios run off of a process. And I've commented to my wife numerous times this year that the high levels of anxiety that she has seen me go through with major market moves in years past is just not happening, because we have rules for each of the portfolios, and we're doing what the rules tell us to do. It's not a computer algorithm, because we don't do that. We actually make the decisions ourselves based off of the data that we see at the end of the day, following the rules. It's like when you are going from point A to point B in your car. If you're driving the speed limit and you're obeying the traffic laws, you don't have any anxiety until that guy changes lanes without a signal. I
mean, there can always be an accident, but that doesn't mean the process was wrong. And not having to deal with all that anxiety is a really big deal. That really is what drives so many investor mistakes, is that they just get so over-concerned about, well, I've got to do something or I can't do anything. And either time you make that decision based out of fear, you're probably making a mistake. And it's that fear factor, that high anxiety, that's what does it. And that's what is so nice about having a rule set. It doesn't make Friday feel any better. Like you said, Don, you still wish, rats, I wish that wasn't going on right now. It's not any fun. But the panic's not there and the anxiety's not there. And you know how your portfolio is going to react to this and what you're going to need to do or not do. And it changes everything. It adds so much clarity. It adds so much more to let your ability come through, is to see where to go instead of just making a knee-jerk reaction and doing something dumb.
So if you think, well, the smart money knows what they're doing, well, that's not always the case either.
True enough.
I mentioned earlier that we had some buy the dip activity that was evident in the market, And one of the things I keep track of is dark pool activity, which are really big funds and really big trades, large blocks of trades. And I post this on my end of week review this week. I don't always post it, but it was interesting because I looked at all the trades that were being posted early on Friday were at 469 on the SPY. Well, I went back and looked at the SPY. Those are the trades from the dark pools who thought that Wednesday was cheap, and they were dumping a whole bunch of money in at 469. Yep. And the first thing that happened on Friday is it gapped down way below that. And later in the day, some bigger trades did come in at the end of the day on Friday. But even the smart money doesn't always get this stuff right. The issue is that there's always conflicting data, just kind of like what I mentioned. The Fed is mixed up with it, trying to figure out how to deal with inflation and employment, and they're opposite decisions that they should be making. Which one do you sacrifice? Well, we look at the economy, and consumers today are in excellent shape, indeed, considering that we went through the worst quarterly economic contraction on record last year. Wages are rising. Net worth is an all-time high. Credit card debt is down. Home equity is skyrocketed. 401k balances are as high as they have ever been. But inflation's higher than it's been in 30 years. Those two don't seem like they go together.
and just having all that great economic and information, all those excellent numbers, really can just get wiped out by fear of inflation, and everybody's looking at it and saying, well, maybe it's probably time to hunker down here a little bit and see where this goes. But both those things are true. Both of those things are happening right now.
So gas prices are 60% higher than they were a year ago. But then a year ago, nobody was driving.
We're anywhere, all stuck at home, right? So. Right.
But I remember 2008, because we were back in Kansas at the time, and gas prices are 16% lower than they were in the summer of 08. So it wasn't fun back then. It's not any fun now, but it's all relative. And it's a function of how do we keep these things in perspective so we make reasoned decisions instead of panicked decisions.
And sometimes that's just taking a step back a little bit, like the gas prices. It's like, yep, they're going up like crazy right now, but they're nowhere near as high as they have been in the past. So sometimes that bigger picture, a little more perspective, can ease a little bit of the, oh no, what's going to happen here? And then it becomes, oh, well, maybe nothing. We've seen this before.
Well, just because I've seen it before, Perry, doesn't mean I want to go through it again.
You got that right. It still doesn't help when the gas pump says, what? How'd I get to $100? You know, how'd that happen? So,
I think by the last time around, I was about $125, $130 to fill my car up. I haven't hit that yet.
Right.
In fact, I haven't hit $100 yet. So
you got to feel good about that, see?
That's right. So you want to talk to us about any of this stuff? We have an open phone line. It's 800-465-8770. Well, in the last segment, I mentioned that the Fed has a problem with trying to get employment back up to the full gauge in the economic data stream, and they're having trouble doing it. Actually, I don't know how they're ever going to do it. The reason they have the task is Congress spent decades and figured out they didn't know how to do it. It's kind of like the old cereal ad. Give it to Mikey. He'll eat anything. Let's give it to the Fed. They're the smart guys. Yeah. So that's not, I don't know that how that's going to resolve itself easily for them. But the real question is, how do we get rid of the labor shortage that we have? I mean, it is a significant problem. The economy is opening up, but businesses can't find enough labor. They can't find enough people to come in and do the jobs they used to do. Part of that is with all the extra government handouts last year, a lot of people paid off debt and looked at their situation, and the boomers said, I think I can retire. I don't need to put up with this anymore.
We're done. Yeah.
And so they're out. And then other people are saying, well, government's paying me to stay home. They're telling me that's healthy. What, you want me to do what?
And you know, I know it doesn't count, but if you just drive around looking at local businesses, everyone has help wanted signs up. I mean, everybody does, it seems like. So at least locally, you know, people are having trouble filling all kinds of positions. It doesn't really matter where or what the work is. They need more people. And like you said, Don, people are making the decision that because they're flush with cash right now, they're doing fine right now. So we're just going to delay this work thing until we have to. And that's what's going on, we think.
Well, and they'll run out of money. I mean, if that's basically what they're doing, because right. The supplements have either stopped or been reduced. The new legislation's trying to make some of them permanent, but it hasn't passed the Senate yet, and there's a lot of infighting going on yet to know whether that's actually going to pass into law. But with the high rate of savings, if people aren't working, they're going to consume that.
Because we know people are spending still right now. So the spending's going on, and like you said, Don, they're going to run through the cushion. And when it's gone, they're not just going to move to the curb. They're going to go back to work. So hopefully that will, to a large extent, resolve itself.
Well, and some of the people who aren't out seeking work have started their own businesses.
That, a lot of that's gone on. That's true.
So they're not knocking on the guy's door saying, can I fill out an application? Because they decided that I don't want to go through this anymore. I want to take care of this. I want to take care of myself.
Correct. There you go.
And so let's see. I've got an idea. I've learned a lot. Let's see if we can put this together and make a go of it. So there's a lot of entrepreneurial activity that's going on. And that's good for the economy.
It's really positive. It really is. Yeah.
It doesn't show up directly in the stock market because those companies aren't listed in the stock market yet.
They're not going to make the needle move yet, but it's going to keep people employed. And some of those are going to stick and become very successful. Some of them, of course, won't. But the fact that people are willing to get out there and start their own business, that's always a good sign.
So one of the things that is having some impact on the market, and it's accelerated with this new COVID variant, is that the forecast for economic activity into next year is to have, it's to expect lower corporate earnings growth.
Correct.
And with that, there's going to be changes in leadership in the market. Instead of just hanging on to something because it did well over the last 10 years, is very likely to be hanging on to something that's going nowhere over the next 10 years. I read a portion of an economic report from a big national firm on Friday morning, and their forecast for next year is pretty consistent with what's come out of the big institutional investment banking firms, that we've been on a real run, but going through these changes that are happening in the economy, don't expect this to continue to the same degree that it has. I mean, I mentioned this a week or two ago, that on Charles Barkley's program, doing a live session of investors asking questions, the average return that investors were expecting for this next year is 18%. But the average return coming out of professional houses is 5 to 6. That's a disconnect.
those are two different numbers, and you know, time will tell where those end up. But the fact that earnings are decreasing and at least not growing, that's a telling sign. That has to show up in returns. We are up against our last break of the afternoon here. If you'd like to sign up for our next market update, if you're wondering what is going on out there with this market, next Saturday, December 4th, 9 a.m. We're going to have our market update. You go through kind of what we're looking at, what we're seeing out there in the market, things that we do to mitigate some of the risks in our client portfolios, maybe have ideas for you about what you can do too. And we always have plenty of time to answer questions you have about the market or individual securities. If you have something in your portfolio and you're wondering whether it should still be there or not, it's a really good time to get a second opinion. Just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Head to the webinar page. Click the registration link, and you will be good to go for next Saturday morning. If you'd like to talk to us, we still have plenty of time to get your call up on the board before the end of the show today. Call us at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. 865-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier in the show, that only the strong survive. It is the strong stocks, strong earnings, strong business plans, strong management. They manage to be leaders, and that's what your portfolio should be built around. We do have a call from Melody. Melody, you are on the line with Don and Perry.
You know, I voted for Trump. The reason I voted for Trump is because he was a businessman. We've got a guy running our country. He's just throwing our country into the garbage. We have no... we don't have, they're printing money that we don't have. We can, what about our children, our country? What are they doing? These people in the Biden administration, I mean, we got illegal immigrants coming into the country. They're not vaccinated. And that's okay. But we all have to get vaccinated. Okay? Then we've got, the oil crisis. So we shut down the oil supply, but we open up our own reserves. It's just like, what is going on? We need Trump in there. This guy does not know what he's doing. These people,
well, we're not sure.
Melanie,
all of your points are well made here, and at least as far as this radio station is concerned.
No, it's very scary. You know, I'm a grocery worker. I have worked through this whole pandemic. I live in Seattle. I work in Seattle. You know what? I have seen the homeless crisis just keep going further and further. All this money is supposed to be helping them. They're just everywhere.
Melanie, this needs to be a two-way conversation here. Let's see if we can answer some of the question. Part of the issue is that bureaucrats believe that they know more than we do, and that we as individuals can't take care of ourselves. The homeless situation in Seattle and the other West Coast cities is really a function of, we will solve this problem by pouring money into it, and that started more than 10 years ago, and nobody has accountability. We can't solve that
if people don't vote them out.
With regard to your question with regard to the administration, both parties, Democrats and Republicans, love to spend money because that's how they get favor from the segments that want them in power. Right now,
they're bankrupting our country right now.
And that's a problem, and that's going to show up in the stock market, because if the new legislation that the administration wants gets passed, it's going to be a heavy burden on the economy. People's tax rates.
My children.
You're right. They're not going to have the same opportunity, because at some point in time, this debt does catch up with us. We don't know exactly when, but as long as they keep printing money and they keep spending, borrowing money, we don't even have the ability to pay our current bills. And now the interest expense on our debt is more than we're spending on national defense, which makes no sense at all from a conservative standpoint. From a liberal standpoint, it's, you don't need national defense anyway. We shouldn't even have borders. It makes no sense to people who honor the Constitution. So we understand your issue. We agree with the issues and the concerns that you have. From our perspective with regard to investing, it makes it much more difficult, and it's problematic. You're in the grocery service business. I assume you have a 401k plan, and it's going to show up in the returns in your 401k plan. And that happens to have a longer impact as far as your retirement security is concerned. So, Melanie, we're glad you're out there. We are in agreement that your concerns are legitimate. We have the same concerns from a portfolio standpoint. We have to make adaptations based on how things unfold in front of us instead of guessing about how they may be. So I want to thank you for being out there and for taking time to call in and chat with us, Melanie. And we hope this next week is better for you. And hopefully the administration's bill proposals are not going to get through the Senate, that there's enough infighting in the Democrat Party that these things are going to fall apart before they become law and we won't have to deal with them. We get through the next election and even the Democrats are planning on losing seats. And if that's the case, then the last 2 years of this administration will be the last, like the last 2 years of the last Obama administration, where with Republican House and Senate, the president can get absolutely nothing done. He's a lame duck. And hopefully that's happens. We see that happen with next year's election. Thanks for taking time to call in, Melanie. That does open up another phone line. If you want to talk to us while we still have some time here, the number is 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Well, one of the issues that we have to deal with when we're dealing with the market, And in dealing with Melanie's concern, is that we don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know at times is the only right answer. I mean, when say, what's going to happen next week? Well, we don't really know. However, on the break, I did happen to take a look at some of the updated futures. And one of the companies that really was in the tank on Friday was Carnival Corporation, Carnival Cruise Lines. I mean, it was down 11% on Friday alone.
That's a bad day. Yeah,
well, that was a continuation of many bad days for Carnival Corp.
Cruises, yeah.
But in overnight trading over in Asia, it's actually trading up. It's got green in the futures. So there's some buying at these levels. There's some people who have capital and say, I've been holding cash waiting for a cheaper price. I'm not really getting, maybe in Carnival, you're getting a value buy. But you take the big brand names that people know, and if you were waiting for a value buy on Apple or Microsoft or Google, I mean, Amazon, it's really hard to find one unless you were buying 10 years ago. And even then, they were still speculative.
It wasn't an easy buy even 10 years ago. Yeah, but admitting that you don't know what's going to happen is really a big key in helping you make logical decisions, because it's easy to talk yourself into, I have to buy this or I can't buy that, because XYZ has to happen now, and it never does have to happen. And so it's good to make sure that you really do get your head around, we don't know what's coming up, and the number of outcomes possible are many, many, many. And what will actually happen, of course, is far, far fewer. So there's lots of things to worry about that never come to pass, but you have to understand that no one knows what's coming up.
Well, that's true, and that's part of the issue with the cryptocurrencies is that they say, well, this is the new internet world. Well, maybe and maybe not. Japan has outlawed cryptocurrencies. I think it was Japan.
It wasn't, and India's considering it.
So basically what's happening is saying, you know, this is a world where there's absolutely no control, and the probability of massive investor abuse and losses is really quite high. So, plus, if we make cryptos the whole world to go, governments have a hard time collecting taxes. And we know they do not want that situation to evolve into a bigger issue for them. We're coming up on the end of our show. Had so much fun, we should have another hour, but we don't. We will have an extra hour on Saturday at 9 o'clock for our stock market update. Register at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website, a couple of clicks, your name, email, and you'll get a link to join us and find out what we conclude is our situation next Saturday morning. send us an email for our week in review, irradio.com. We need your first and last name in the body of the email. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America.